This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Let's bring aboard now Kenny Gold, Regional Vice President, New York State Corrections Officers and PBA, because I want to find out more of what we did not know yesterday in his lengthy appearance on the program. Kenny, thanks very much for joining us once again today to hopefully fill in some of the blanks. Much appreciated.
Of course, Tom. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. The situation that happened 1 a.m. yesterday, can you explain what you know about what led to this inmate uprising in which three COs were injured?
Yeah, I'll do the best I can because, as I told you yesterday on the show, the most information I get is through the membership that was there. The men and women that were there at the time, and obviously a lot of them had worked 16, 24-hour days. You know, they're back there today as the facility is still locked down while they're frisking. But around 1 o'clock, from what I've been able to, the information I've been able to get from the members that were there, you know, some of them that were there, you know, that's right around their count time. So they do the count, which, as we all know, is the most important thing in corrections besides making sure everyone's alive and breathing. They do their count. There was some sort of disturbance. They had seen an inmate and basically told him to, you know, they wanted to speak with him. The inmate kind of pushed past an officer, shouldered him, so to speak, and kept moving where they actually, that's where the injuries had happened because they had to use force on the inmate. And as they were using force, two cell phones came out of the inmate's person. I can't tell you where the cell phones came from, pockets, body orifices. I don't know where the cell phones came from, but two cell phones came out. That's where the injuries occurred, where an officer had injured their wrist and another officer injured the wrist. Like I told you folks yesterday, even though it's kind of disheartening to see that accounts are coming out and Dox's statement saying that there was no injuries we've seen. We heard that there was one. There's obviously paperwork and people went to urgent cares and outside medical to be treated.
Just to be clear, the one injury was to the wrist, and I think you told us yesterday the other was to a knee of a separate CO.
Yes, there was actually three officers injured, but those are the main two. To keep on, can't harp it enough, but when your own employer says that didn't happen, but yet there's paperwork and people going to medical units to prove that it happened is quite shocking.
Why would they lie? Why would the Department of Correctional Services lie about the fact that would so easily be disproven?
I have no idea. That's a great question. But why would docs do half the things they would do? Like as we talked yesterday, why would they try to trim 30% of the staff that they don't have anyways to make it less safer for everybody? But that's just something that. That's something that the powers that be, that's a question for them, to make it look better for the public, just like you know, with this whole incident. And I'm sure as you're trying to put the pieces together, how this happened, and as we're speaking on this conversation right now, I think the commissioner's talking at a public protection hearing, and I haven't seen much of it, but some of the statements that are coming out is basically saying that the officers, you know, the inmates didn't barricade themselves in there, that the officers left the unit. As we were getting to that, you know, obviously they used force. The inmates didn't listen to, you know, going to Collins specifically at that 1 o'clock time. And then the inmates just were agitated. They wouldn't listen to anything. These guys are on a housing unit. It's not like a prison. When people think prison, a max cell where they you can put them in a cell and close the door. This is a medium security facility in a dorm setting where their inmates can walk and go where they want. They're not shackled. They're not behind bars. So you only have a couple of officers up there dealing with an already combative inmate that caused injuries. And then throughout the night, it got to the point where someone told them to leave the unit, and that's what they did.
So you've got, let me just, I'm just trying to paint a picture for people. So you've got an inmate who was told to go somewhere. He refused to go to where he was directed, and in the course of physically directing him to where he was supposed to be, two cell phones dropped from his person, and it was at that moment that the three COs were injured. As long as that's correct, what happened next?
So they go from there, from what I understand, and it was just, I don't want to say combative, but it was a really tense situation from, you know, I can give you ballpark, say 1:15 till 5-6 o'clock in the morning, and it kept intensifying until the officers were given the order that they needed to pull off of the unit, meaning leave the unit, lock the doors, and that left the convicts in the three housing units by themselves. From what, and I can't tell you because this is stuff, as I told you, I would love to tell you everything, but I'll give you exactly what I know, because a lot of times docs won't give us where the union, if they give us the information, they expect us to tell you folks. And that's what they don't want to have happen. And you know what the commissioner said today, after a senator asked him, about what was going on, and that said we willingly gave them the dorm and did not barricade themselves in there, and we were in constant contact with the incarcerated individuals. So whether it was phone or their tablets or their iPads that they have, as most of the public says, I don't know how they were in contact. That's all docs information that I would never know how they were in contact with them at this point. And at that point, Tom, the whole dorm was told, three dorms were left to themselves, and that's when, as we talked about, you know, all the crisis teams were there, the corrections emergency response teams from around the state were there, different facilities from around the region were there. We're all getting there to attempt to rectify the situation.
So when the one inmate became combative and the cell phones came out and an altercation ensued with the one inmate during which the three COs were injured, one with a shattered wrist, one with an injured knee, and the other apparently with less severe injuries, did the other inmates pile on? How did things escalate?
No, I mean, luckily that was it when it came to injuries for the whole incident, you know, between staff and inmates alike. That was it. And when I say luckily, I mean, we're talking about this could have been catastrophic, and thankfully nothing, there was no piling on, but that the atmosphere was tense. You know, it was like the members that I spoke to that were around for the situation, they used words like this was, I want to paraphrase it, but you know, this was the worst thing they've ever seen. They've never been through something like that before. They've never seen anything like that before. They were fearful for their lives because they never, ever imagined going into a situation like that. And, you know, and I hate to harp on what we always say, but this is an atmosphere that we've been saying for you know, we keep saying we've been screaming from the rooftops for how long now, that it's not the if, but when, and the when was yesterday. And thank God it wasn't worse.
Kenny Gold is with us, Regional Vice President of the New York State CO and PBA on News Radio 930 WBEN, the Trocare College WBEN live line. Now, you used a word that we hear all the time, but I think it's important that we know the context and what it involves. When you say the word lockdown at Collins Correctional, what exactly is a lockdown, and what exactly is lockdown, and how is it done?
A lockdown is when all the inmates are supposed to stay in their cubes or their cells, depending on the facility. They're fed in so that the whomever is at the facility, whatever officers or teams are there, are able to frisk all the areas and all the inmate cells and personal areas just to look for contraband and weapons and so on and so forth, drugs, whatever might be in the facility, to try to clean it out and kind of slow down what's actually going on in there to alleviate some of the stress and some of the tensions.
Now, the situation, do you have any information? We had information yesterday. We said it was unconfirmed information and to be taken with a grain of salt. Have you heard anything reliable about the inmates having a list of demands?
I've heard a lot of rumors on that. I can't say that I heard anything, but one of the biggest, you know, if they did have demands from some of the members there at Collins, and we touch on staffing, is they say that they had a lot of issues with the package room there, which to most people you would question, what does that mean? Well, due to HALT, as we spoke about, the law that was enacted in 2022, which basically takes all penalties away, it also added a lot of programs, which took away from staffing and exacerbated the staffing problem. But one of the first things when you can't staff all the areas that they take away at a jail like Collins would be the package room, which these advocates that make these programs and make these plans, they seem to forget that the package room is where the inmates get what you send, the family send in for them. So as an inmate, if they truly are bitching, complaining about the package room, the reasoning why that would be is not because the officers don't want to give them their packages, because that's the first, one of the first places that's actually closed down. When they close it down, it's taken away from the inmates as well. So again, going back to the lawmakers that make these uninformed policies that hurt everybody, including the inmates, they don't ever talk to anybody working frontline staff. So as for your actual question about when it comes to demands, that's been the one triggering thing that I heard more than anything else, is that, you know, they heard a lot of grumblings about the package room, and it would make complete sense at a jail like Collins when, as you know, these men and women down there had been working 16, 24-hour days nonstop, and if they can't staff all the spots, that's one of the spots they would always close first. And again, that's just speculating. I don't know that for sure. I know they close that all the time, but I don't know if that's a demand.
Are there any data to suggest that the package room is one of the major places where contraband, be it cell phones or drugs, are gotten into the prison?
No. I mean, someone else will tell you that from the department, or the legislators will tell you that, but they made a, you know, the union, although the commissioner says we don't bring any suggestions, the union had been begging and pleading with them to do a secure vendor program, which means it comes from like directly from like your Walmarts or wherever it may be. That comes directly from them. All the drugs and the weapons, it comes right from the visit room. You know, these failed policies and the laws, you know, the body scanners that the union, another suggestion that we've given that they say that we don't give, is to have body scanners. But, you know, the body scanners are borderline useless at this point. Not all facilities, they all have them, but, you know, only a handful of them are actually using them. All the drugs and the weapons are coming right from the visitors. We know it's there. They, you know, the department fails to have drug dogs at all facilities, like the union has suggested. And I hate to sound like I'm harping on it, but, you know, it's so unthinkable that your bosses will come out in statements and say that the union should come back with some suggestions. And I just rattled off two or three things there that we've given suggestions for, and they failed to listen. And then what happens? Drugs come in, weapons come in. Then the officers are forced to go through being exposed to fentanyl or who knows what, because I don't, you know, to this minute, Collins went through this stuff in the summer. Wyoming went through the stuff in the summer. Upstate's going through the stuff right now. Nobody can tell us what they've been exposed to, but God knows something's happening. They don't just make this stuff up, or I'm sure the department will say that we're making it up, but, you know, it's getting so disheartening and so frustrating that all these policies, all the drugs are coming from the visitors. And then furthermore, there's no penalty for bad behavior, as we touch on every show. So you can get drugs in, or if you get caught with drugs, you know, they can test your urine, and what are they going to do? Is they're going to throw the misbehavior report out? They're going to put you in timeout? Like, there's no reason. They're going to move you somewhere else, you know, and that's before you talk about what the officers see when these inmates are high on the drugs, on the synthetic marijuana, and having to officers are getting assaulted left and right because these inmates are high, trying to protect them from other inmates, get them down to medical, and then that creates a bigger staffing problem. I mean, I can go on and on and on, and it's just a vicious cycle that everybody refuses to listen that can actually effectuate change.
So if, unless I'm hearing you incorrectly, it sounds like it's more difficult for a law-abiding citizen to get on an airline flight than it is for people to smuggle stuff into a prison.
It's easier to get someone, and I can't take credit. I'll never take credit for something I don't say, but someone once said it's easier to get into a prison than it is to get in a Bills game. And it is. You know, there's really, and it really boils down to the no repercussions. It's not many repercussions for the inmates. How much do the, you know, if you get caught bringing contraband into a facility, what does the visitor really do? A slap on the wrist, a parking, I don't want to call it a parking ticket, but an appearance ticket, something along that line. I mean, people need to take a hard look. When I say people, the public, if they saw what goes on day in, day out, and just, I always say the same example, the best example I can give is, like, everybody has a mother or a father or a grandparent that, God forbid, if they ever need medical attention, and if you find out that use Collins or Wendy or Albion, Orleans, Attica, you know, how many times ambulances are dispatched to correctional facilities to take inmates out because they're high on drugs, or they've gotten to they hurt themselves so bad or got into a fight so bad that they got to go to the prison due to drugs. And what happens, there's only so many ambulances in every community. What happens if your parent needs it or your grandparent needs it and it's too busy going away for someone that's going to prison that shouldn't have any sort of drugs or any sort of drug problem? And it's just, like I said, the cycle is nonstop. It's endless. It's ongoing. And, you know, when we try to make change, it gets shot down or says you don't bring solutions. And then the politicians are trying to figure out ways to make it easier for inmates to cause problems in prisons rather than make it safer for everybody that work and live there.
I've got about a minute before I need to break. What kind of physical contact is allowed between visitors and inmates at Collins?
At Collins, it's a medium facility, so they're allowed to, what they should be doing is they should be just holding hands. They're allowed to, they should be allowed to hug briefly, and I believe kiss. Most facilities do it when they get together or when they leave at most, but you know, you just don't know. And, you know, the visit rooms are probably the biggest, no matter what the advocates say, no matter what the department says, the visit room is the main source of where drugs are passed because they're allowed to have chips, they're allowed to have food, they're allowed to have. So, you know, you only have so many officers working. And if you got 40, 30, 60 inmates in a visit room area, how are you going to catch every little thing being passed or holding hands or something like that? And God knows, and we all know, meaning we that do the job, the inmate will take the drugs and swallow it, and then off it goes from there. And sooner or later, they'll have their drugs when it gets through their system.
Filling in some information that we did not have yesterday is the Regional Vice President, New York State Corrections Officers and PBA, Kenny Gold. We're getting some new information today. I think what a lot of people would like to know is how many inmates were the real, shall we say, troublemakers at about 1:15 yesterday morning, and where are they now? What happened to them?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, thanks for that question. That's actually a great one that I think even our membership, the officers and sergeants all over the state would like to know. When the commissioner says that they didn't barricade themselves in, from the members that I spoke with directly, you know, they say, it's such a slap in their face because responding to and hearing what happened from the use of force with the cell phones and then, you know, them trying to get into the unit, the inmates blocking the doors and screaming in their faces into, obviously the incident happened near the bathroom, if not in the bathroom, I'm not 100% sure on that one, but then they're blocking the areas to get in. And when they say the officers pulled out of the area, obviously, as any officer knows and the public should understand that, you know, it's a paramilitary organization. They can't just walk off on their own. They were told to pull out. But when inmates are screaming at the doorways and this and that, you know, I don't know what would consider it a barricade. Maybe they didn't make something to call it a barricade. But, you know, between three housing units, three dorms worth of inmates in control of themselves, that's unacceptable. But as for where they went, I think that's a fantastic question because with the HALT Act that we spoke about and the lack of disciplinary punishment, more than likely, and I don't know the exact number, Tom, I'd give it if I had it, but inmates got bussed out to other facilities around the region, if not the state. I don't know where they went. But they go there and they're a general population inmate at Collins. They go through with this. And have the disturbance and the interference and all the problems, the barricades, whatever we want to call it, at Collins and whatever inmates got shipped out, we'd love to know what their penalty is. I mean, they should go in normal times, they would have went to the special housing unit or the box or the hole or whatever the public would call it, what you see on TV for bad behavior. What we believe is that these inmates probably went to other facilities. They're probably in their general population, like nothing can happen with no penalties or a slap on the wrist, with no serious punishment for their actions yesterday. And what's even more fearful about the fact that there's no repercussions or no penalty is now you just spread them out. Now, what happens in the next facility tomorrow or today as we're speaking or 2 weeks from now? There's a reason why there's laws in the streets. There needs to be laws in prisons, and the only people that suffer for bad behavior are the officers and the sergeants and anybody that works inside of a prison. And that's what something like this, you know, we're terrified of, you know, the fact that the people that make the laws, the people that run the department aren't speaking up to the people that make the laws on our behalf. You know, they say the biggest question we get, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but I'm kind of amped up today because you listen to your bosses talk about our members in the fact that everything seems, you know, from the start of that there was only one injury, which is the biggest fallacy, especially when we, like we already talked about, we know it's on paper. But the same people that should be sticking up for us, the answers they come back with, well, it's a law, that's the best we can do. Well, someone needs to stand up for us other rather than the union, because obviously the people running the department has more weight with these legislators than the people advocating for, as I believe it was your show or maybe before, they think unions speak for money, money, money. Money is the farthest thing. Our well-being and our safety is at jeopardy. It's under siege. Every facility is like a war zone, and yesterday was one of the biggest war zones that this department seen in quite some time. And you know, we know that the commissioner came down, but where's the governor's statement? Where's the governor coming out? She's quick to say something about every little incident that happens, or this or that. I haven't seen one statement from her saying, I hope the officers are okay. I'm glad that everything worked out down there. I hope everything's going well. These are the best people in the world, like we are. You know, we don't see any of those comments. You know, I actually haven't even seen her say anything about corrections. Like, it meant nothing to her. And it's disgusting.
Kathy Hochul has gone to the metaphorical dark side years ago. I don't think you're going to get anything out of Kathy Hochul. Maybe she's busy getting some Botox injected. I'm not sure. Now, Kenny Gold, one of the obviously, you would have records of the people who visit the inmates at Collins Correctional. Is one way to punish those who were involved in this insurrection, is one way to place them in facilities that make it more difficult to receive visits from people who tend to visit them?
Yeah, well, I'll make it clear. I definitely don't have any records of who comes in. The department has records of who comes in to visit who. But, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing that we wish they would take away. It's a simple policy. You get caught bringing drugs in to make it unsafe for anybody that works there and obviously lives there, then you shouldn't be allowed to be back into prison, or at least penalize them a year, 2 years, something. Make them think, if you're getting drugs coming in, that there needs to be some repercussions for it. But instead, they get caught, someone gets caught bringing drugs in for an inmate, they don't get this, you know, that visitor might get put on a restriction for a couple of weeks, but that inmate gets another visit from somebody else the next week. The inmate needs to be penalized from visits, not who comes in, because they have a network of people that they can get drugs in from. If they catch Tom Bowerly today, then Kenny Gold's bringing it in the next week. Like, the inmate needs to be penalized. So your visitor brings it in, you are no longer getting visits. There has to be some real repercussions. The drugs is the most rampant thing than ever before, and I think I might have mentioned it in the past. I mean, these inmates go to prison without a drug problem, some of them, most of them, but they leave with a drug problem. You know, when you're in a prison that shouldn't have drugs, you shouldn't have to leave prison after your sentence is over with Narcan or Suboxone or whatever else they need to do, which we haven't even gotten to the point where docs thought it's a great idea and the legislators to give these inmates Suboxone so that it can help them with their drug problem. So we're literally passing out drugs to inmates inside of a prison, but that's neither here nor there. I can go on and on about that, but and I feel like I'm rambling when it comes to that.
No. Speaking of that, during the time when the D block was barricaded and there weren't any personnel on the floor, how did the inmates, how were they fed and how did they get their medications?
I have no idea at this point. I haven't heard about that, Tom. I know the rest of the jail had been fed in, from what I understand, but I don't know what happened with those inmates. I would definitely tell you, but I haven't gotten that answer yet at this point.
So, you know, you've talked a lot about the HALT Act, and you've been around the block a few times. I'm wondering if you can explain to people listening the difference between being a corrections officer in New York State in 2025 versus prior to the HALT Act, and examples of why it is a bad idea.
Sure, absolutely. Prior to the HALT Act being enacted in 2022, docs had somewhat of a disciplinary structure, a penalty. Inmates got penalized for bad behavior. Even before the HALT Act got enacted, previous Governor Cuomo signed like a SHU regulation type of thing, to SHU meaning special housing unit, for how much time these inmates could spend into special housing. And even before he signed that into law or made that a policy, there was strict penalties for assaulting officers, for murdering someone in prison, for constant bad behavior, for drug use, being caught with weapons, so on and so forth. Right now, if you go to prison, and I know you covered a story last year where an officer's finger was bitten off. We just had a female officer seriously assaulted at Groveland for totally surprised her, jumped up on the podium and started wailing on this woman. And right now, an inmate knows you can do any of these major infractions, and the most you can do due to the HALT Act in the special housing unit, which I would love to point out that the special housing unit gets more traction, more interaction with clergy, management teams, counselors than any other place in the facility. The most you can do in a special housing unit for bad behavior is 15 days. So to make it clear, the best example anybody can say, you murder someone on the street, you go to prison. You murder someone in prison, the worst prison time you can do is 15 days. And when you really think about that, these inmates are doing life. They're murderers, they're rapists, they're drug dealers, whatever it might be. 15 days is a timeout for them. And, there's gangs in prisons. There's a lot of things that go on that people do stuff. And quite frankly, what it also does that a lot of the advocacy groups forget about, they're advocating for the inmates, but how about the everyday inmate that doesn't do anything wrong, that they're being penalized due to the bad actors as well, or the fact that they need to have some protective custody or something that they're afraid of. They took all that away from them because they feel that it's inhumane to go to a special housing unit for X amount of time. Well, it's also inhumane to murder somebody or to bite people's fingers off or to wail off and some of these officers, like I've explained in the past, right at Collins, there's a member got assaulted outside the mess hall. That man will never work again. How does he look at his kids and his family knowing that some inmate just beat him so bad where he'll never even be able to step foot in the prison again? But by the way, that inmate got 15 days for his actions.
For somebody who is not a lifer, in the case of an assault, why can't that person be prosecuted and have time added on to the sentence?
Well, there's a lot with that. And as a correction officer, there are facilities they prosecute. We send it out to the DAs, to the, state police will get the information, the DAs will get it. But a lot of times with a lot of the other laws that are created by the legislature with bail laws and all that other stuff, if it's not done in time frame, sometimes it gets lost. If you get, you heard the story yesterday of an officer getting thrown on feces in their face, and if the protocols aren't followed, the steps for, it's called aggravated harassment, making sure that everything's collected, bagged up, everything done correctly. There's so many variables that come into play to actually get prosecution. And then the biggest thing that we're facing inside when it comes to the correctional facilities is by the time the DA gets it, depending on what county it's in, they might not look at it as it's that important. If the person's getting out soon, they might prosecute. If the person's a lifer and they did something egregious in prison, they might just leave it alone because they know that there's nothing they can do and they don't want to waste taxpayers' money on that. There's so many variables that come into play when there's actual, because there is assaults in prison, then they can be charged criminally. But there's more to it than just, the penalty inside a prison that we're facing. And it's an uphill battle every day. And when the inmates know they have the upper hand, why wouldn't you just assault an officer? Why wouldn't you just, sometimes they assault officers, Tom, just to get out of that prison or to try to get out of that prison.
We talked about this, pardon me, a little bit yesterday, but your union recently put up a vote of no confidence in the head of the Department of Correctional Services in New York State. It was dismissed by both the governor and the person in question as being, basically lunacy. Tell us about that vote and why.
Well, yeah, our governing body, all the union presidents, we call them chiefs from around the state, voted unanimously as a vote of no confidence. As we spoke with him back in December, and he addressed the whole membership as an executive assembly about issues that were going around, across the state between staffing, obviously some of the laws that weren't passed, recruitment, retention. And we came to the next DA, and everything, quite frankly, Tom, got worse than what it was in December when we spoke with them. And the membership at this point, I think we can't say it enough. And I don't even know how, you know, I tell everybody, I can't lie, I'm not in the jail every day like those men and women are. And to see their faces and to listen to their stories. And, you know, when I say they're beat down, like there is no adjective that can say what those members feel right now. No negative adjective about how bad it is, how people are leaving in droves. And, you know, the commissioner himself is what, you know, we've heard, and what can be broken down is the fact that this commissioner has been there when there was staffing, and he's led us into the staffing problems. And, you know, and he turns around and blames the union when we do a vote of no confidence, is if we're not bringing solutions. As I said earlier, we spit out things that everything we've brought up has been a solution. And you know what? And these solutions are not just for our members. You know, it's for the safety of everybody, including the inmates that we bring, and nobody listens. And as the leader of the department, as he has been for quite some time, he might not have been the commissioner, but everybody knows he was running the department, even with the acting commissioner there. He had the ability to make change and effectuate the change that was needed to keep us safe, as that's an obligation to them, and he neglected to do so. And, you know, when we talked to everybody, something like Collins, you know, everything blew up in the calls that were received and text messages and Facebook, everywhere, and more importantly, the jails themselves, what they hear and what they see is everything that the members themselves, the frontline men and women that actually do the job, are saying and screaming and begging for anybody to listen through and including to the superintendents, which he's their boss. So, you know, superintendents or wardens, as people would call them, they don't have the ability to run their facilities like they did before, just like what Bartosiello with the commissioner did. We put the vote of no confidence in. We say we want to, you know, with the vote of no confidence, we were directed to make sure that we get a meeting with the governor or to demand and try to get a meeting with the governor within 2 weeks to speak about our problems because she's his boss. And they kick out a memo saying we're going to cut 30% staff in all facilities by February 28th. That's the response. This is what we're up against every day. That doesn't make it safer.
70% is the new 100%. That is Kathy Hochul's math and the Department of Correctional Services head. That is their math, that you've got a shortage of staff, so let's cut it even further and make 70% the new 100%. To me, it's utterly insane. Kenny Gold, I want to thank you very much for your time and your extended appearance yesterday when everything was breaking loose, and appreciate your time on the Troche College WBEN Live Line.
Yeah, thank you for covering our stories and listening to our members. We really appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. 356 at News Radio 930 WBEN.